Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, the 24th of August, 2016. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Voters have just one contested race this October here in Petersburg when it comes to candidates for local office. Yesterday was the filing deadline for candidates for 19 available seats on the Borough Assembly and other elected boards and commissions. A total of 15 people filed paperwork in time to run for one of those seats. The other positions remain vacant and could be filled later by appointment. Incumbent Mayor Mark Jensen has filed for re-election to his seat. He has no challengers. There is a race for Borough Assembly again this year. Former City Council member Mark Martinson is running for one of the two open seats, along with incumbents Jay Stanton Greger and Kurt Wallhuter. Martinson also sought an Assembly seat back in 2014, saying he wanted to give voters a choice. School Board incumbent Sandra Stevens has filed to keep her seat. However, another incumbent, Mara Lutomski, did not put her name in for the election, so there will be one vacancy on the school board. There will be three empty seats on the hospital board. Incumbent Darlene Whitethorn was the only person seeking one of the four spots there. It looks like the Planning and Zoning Commission will have a full roster. Three people have filed for the three vacant seats on that commission: Otis Marsh, Yancey Nelson, and Tor Benson. Incumbents Bob Dolan and Glenn Reed Jr. are seeking seats on the Harbor Board. That leaves no vacant seats on the Harbor Board. And a note, this story has been updated since this morning. Borough Clerk Debbie Thompson writes in an email she missed a declaration of candidacy form from Reed in her inbox and initially only had Dolan running for the Harbor Board. However, both those seats have interest. Barb Fish and Alec McMurrin have both filed to continue on the Library Board. That gives that board a full roster. And Jared Cook and Devrin Bennett are running for a three-year term on the Public Safety Board. There's still one vacant seat on that advisory group as well. Of course, voters will decide one hotly contested ballot question. That's whether to prohibit the sale and importation of marijuana in the borough. Last day to register to vote in the local election is September 4th. There are forms available on the borough website, as well as the Borough Clerk's Office or the State Division of Elections website. You can find some links on our website, kfsk.org, along with this story. Absentee voting at the Clerk's Office starts up September 14th and runs until the day before the October 4th election. Juneau's first state-certified commercial cannabis farm is up and running, with plans to start selling their products as soon as October. Juneau Empire reports that Rainforest Farms received their final inspection and was certified to begin full-scale production Friday. Brothers James and Giono Barrett, who run the grow operation, have already filled the site with nearly 300 pot plants. Giono Barrett says the growing process takes about 3.5 months and that they won't begin selling a pot until mid-October at the earliest. The Barretts are growing 55 types of cannabis and plan to offer as many as 30 at a time when their store opens. The state's Marijuana Control Board is expected to approve the first licenses for stores to begin selling marijuana by next month. Two of three men involved in a Christmas Eve burglary here in Petersburg were sentenced to jail time Tuesday. 27-year-old Taylor Homer and 21-year-old Anthony Sains both appeared in separate hearings before Superior Court Judge William Carey at the Petersburg Courthouse yesterday. The men were accused of breaking into a warehouse at Hungerford Hill, south of downtown Petersburg, and stealing a pickup truck, tires, tools, and 9 guns on Christmas Eve 2015. In May of this year, a third man, 38-year-old Neil Ray Hacker, was sentenced to just under 2 years of jail time for his role in the burglary. Judge Carey yesterday said he thought Hacker was the driving force in the crimes. For his part, Homer received a jail sentence totaling 1 year. He had already entered guilty pleas on charges of theft and burglary in the second degree. 10 other charges against him were dismissed, and the judge and attorneys in the case noted that he cooperated with police in that investigation. In an unrelated case, Homer also pleaded guilty to a charge of driving under the influence stemming from a vehicle accident in early December. He was sentenced to an additional 30 days, with all but 27 suspended in that case, and he's on probation for 1 year and has to pay a $1,500 fine. District Attorney James Scott called the driving under the influence case more serious than the burglary case because he thought Homer could have killed himself or someone else in that accident. Meanwhile, Sains was sentenced to 1 year in jail for his part in the burglary. All but 60 days of that is suspended. He pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of attempted burglary in the second degree and had the other 11 charges against him dismissed. He's also on probation for 1 year following that conviction. One Petersburg high schooler spent part of her summer in Germany this year, and she brought a few German students back here to Alaska. As Abby Collins reports, the girls explored each other's cultures and took a chance on traveling through a Rotary short-term exchange program.
Felia and Svea Zanka knew they wanted to come to Alaska for years.
They actually, on TV, they saw a documentary about Alaska.
That's Jillian Wittstock, whose family hosted the 15-year-old German twins in Petersburg this summer.
They were like, we want to go to Alaska, and so they did all this research and stuff.
The two talked with their local Rotary director in Germany.
So she put it out there, and nobody was taking it, and nobody was gonna get them there.
Enter Petersburg Rotarian Dave Berg.
She talked to him, and he's like, well, I'll put it out there in Petersburg and see who takes it.
Still nothing.
He came to my mom, and he's like, would Jillian be interested in going to Germany for an exchange?
When Wittstock thought it would be a year-long commitment, she wasn't interested.
I don't really feel comfortable leaving home for that long yet. But then he said it was just for the month, and it was just in the summer, and I wouldn't be missing any school, it wouldn't be a problem, and I was like, that sounds perfect.
Rotary offers youth exchange programs for teens ages 15 to 19. They vary in length from a few weeks to a full year. The short-term exchange program, or STEP, is relatively new to the organization and allows participants to choose where they want to go. In late June, Wittstock traveled to Soltau, a city in northern Germany between Hamburg and Hanover, and that's where she met the Zanka sisters and spent the next month living with their family.
They took me to a couple different cities. I got to go to Berlin and Rostock and Wismar and Cochem and all over, and we just drove. We didn't have to fly anywhere because it's all very close by.
Then in late July, the three flew together to the United States. First stop, Seattle.
First we go to the Adele concert in Seattle. That was... Thank you.
That's Felia Zanka. She's the more talkative of the two sisters and visibly excited about their time here.
Then in Alaska, we... What was the first?
The glacier.
The glacier. We make a glacier tour with a boat and with Grandpa Mike.
Mike Schwartz. He took us to Lakonti.
Then whale watching.
And that was, oh my god, we see breaches. Breaches? A lot. 4, I think. And I like the whales. It was so boom, and yes, you feel like that you are so tiny, and they are so big, and I like the whales. And then what was
cabin?
The cabin, and they have a cabin
at Anchor Point.
Mm-hmm. A very pretty cabin, and we make a fire there.
While camping, they tried a new, very American snack.
They tried s'mores for the first time.
That was... Oh, like, I love s'mores. We have no s'mores in Germany. That's so sad.
They saw Alaska from the sky, taking a ride on a float plane, and visited the Annan Bear and Wildlife Observatory in Wrangell.
There we see 3 brown bears and a lot of black bears and also black bear cubs.
Oh,
that was so cute. I think that I want hug her, the little cubs, but then I think maybe not. But it was so cute to see, and it was so that they are so in the next to yourself, and that was so but also so
Coming from a city, Felia and Svea appreciate life in small town Alaska.
You have no traffic, and it's so the rest is beautiful on the night, natural, and the mountains and the trees. It's so beautiful because it's a city, I love it here because the air is so free and so clean, and the mountains, and you can
everyone.
This is also nice, and then you see the mountains, and you hear whales when you wake up.
Sitting with the three girls, it's clear they've become friends. They share laughs, help each other with the other's language, and appear generally at ease. Whitstock says she's more open-minded about traveling now and would like to do another exchange in the future. And all three of them say they would do this one all over again. In Petersburg, I'm Abby Collins.
In other news, a Canadian company conducting exploration for a potential mine north of Haines was recently granted permission to grow its project. Last week, the Federal Bureau of Land Management approved the Constantine Metals Resources Plan to expand operations at its Palmer Project site. The plan includes building a couple miles of road, along with culverts and bridges, to provide easier access to more drilling sites. Environmental analysis found that while the work will have some impacts on water and wildlife, it says the endeavor shouldn't cause significant harm. Emily Files has more on that story from Haines.
Right now, Constantine relies on a lot of this. The company uses a helicopter to shuttle employees and equipment to exploration sites along the mountain. Workers drill holes into the rock that average between 500 and 2,500 feet deep, looking for copper, zinc, gold, and silver. Liz Cornejo is Constantine's exploration and community manager.
There's a lot of activity going on in that area of the mountain, and it makes sense now to reestablish access to that area to better service those activities without the need for a helicopter for all operations.
Constantine had permission for up to 5 acres of ground disturbance. They now plan to build an access road that extends across Glacier Creek, up a mountain close to the main mineral deposit. That activity mandates an environmental assessment by the BLM. It took about a year to complete and garnered more than 200 public comments. Dennis Teitzel with the BLM oversees projects in the Haines area.
It is our responsibility and goal to ensure that operations we permit on public lands are safe and protective of natural resources and the local community.
Teitzel says the plan met those standards. The environmental assessment acknowledges that the expansion will have some adverse impacts on the nearby Glacier Creek and wildlife, but the BLM determined that the potential effects are not significant. Guy Archibald with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council sees it differently. One of the conservation group's major worries is the road construction and other work around Glacier Creek could affect the rivers it flows into. The Klahini River and Chilkat River are important resources for subsistence and commercial salmon fishing. Here's Archibald.
And this is, what we hope not to see above the Klahini River. There's too many communities and people and cultures that rely on healthy water and healthy fisheries up there.
One of Archibald's major concerns is that the road construction and other activity could strike rock that contains sulfide and cause acid rock drainage, harming water and wildlife. Constantine's Cornejo says that's a risk they've evaluated and found to be unlikely.
All of the rocks in the area where that we're working for the road building will be non-acid generating.
The BLM also put an additional requirement in place to try to minimize the potential for acid rock generation. Constantine must have a geologist on site inspecting road work on a daily basis during construction for unanticipated exposures to sulfide minerals. Along with the road construction monitoring, the BLM lists a few other requirements. They include monitoring for raptor nests and mountain goats, and that the company provide a buffer to keep activity away from those areas. Constantine's exploration right now consists of drilling holes from the surface of the mountain. In the future, it could include underground exploration.
So at this point, it's something that is just something that we're evaluating but not yet proposing. And so it's important to look at our activities as they're currently proposed, which is just the road work to help support existing exploration activities.
Cornejo says every rock, soil, and water sample they take is to help evaluate the potential for a mine. They hope the newly approved road will help make that exploration easier and safer. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And this story out of Ketchikan, a dog is back home safe with its owners after being rescued from the Tongass Narrows by a pilot who just landed a float plane when he spotted that animal struggling in the water. Ketchikan Daily News reports pilot Mike Hudgens pulled the miniature Sheltie named Misty from the water Sunday. The animal had been swimming alone in the channel between the Ketchikan International Airport ferry dock and the Taquan Air's float plane dock. Hudgens had finished giving a float plane tour when he called out to the dog about 40 yards ahead of where he landed. He was able to get the dog close enough to pull her out, and a microchip helped locate owner Sean Inlow, who says he plans on getting his dog Misty a life vest. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.